like to begin by asking you to please mute your mics. I hope the fire truck in the background is not too loud, but yeah, please mute your mics. We've discussed having to tinker with the settings on general voice during the fireside chats to permanently mute everyone but me until we, well, not permanently, but I don't want to have to do that, but it seems like every fireside, after repeated warnings, there are still people who who aren't thinking about it. So just please keep that in mind, not the end of the world if it happens, but it's something we should be able to do. We should be able to muster that much competence at the very least. So anyways, I hope you had a fantastic Christmas. I hope your New Year celebrations were enjoyable and responsible, at least mostly responsible. And I hope that your New Year is off to a good start. I hope you read the post that I made, the announcement that I made on New Year's, and I hope to take those things to heart. I hope that you are constantly seeking self-improvement in 2019. And we're not going to get to where we want to get to unless we are the type of people that are capable of changing the world. And it's going to take, we need to be the best versions of ourselves if we're going to accomplish that. So we, you know, now is the time to be very honest, very critical with ourselves in a positive way, not in a self-deprecating manner. And really just look at what we need to work on. And look, I know there are people in this organization who are overweight. We're going to have to talk about that if, you know, by the conference nothing changes, by the summer nothing changes. I've been kind of lax in that regard, although I have talked to some people in the past, but that's going to change. People expect quite a bit from Identity Europa, and if we're kind of really being lax in you know, not just in the weight category as well, but if we let our standards go in general, then, you know, people will lose faith in what we're building. So, white pill of the week. The government is still shut down. That is a white pill of sorts. It would be great if the government didn't have to shut down in order to, you know, take care of the situation along the southern border, but that obviously is not the case. That is not where we are. And as I was saying for most of the end of November and early December as well, Trump needs to fight. We need to see some fight from Donald Trump. We elected this bombastic, this bombastic guy, this very bold to a fault, author of The Art of the Deal. And we thought he was going to get a lot more done. Now he's up against the adversarial judiciary, the adversarial mainstream media, the political establishment overall, both the right and the left, is doing its best to thwart Donald Trump's agenda. So it's not all Trump's fault, but we need to see more. We need to see him pushing back. And shutting down the government was great because he's threatened to do that in the past. He threatened to do all kinds of things in the past, only to cave a few hours later. But he didn't do it this time. And that's good. And the border has, rather, the government remains shut down. And that is a good thing. I hope that it changes. But I think the most likely scenario is that, the new Congress is getting sworn in tomorrow. And I think that it's going to be harder for Trump to accomplish anything. But you know what? He tried. He made an effort. The Democrats just refused to budge. They refused to budge. There was a Democratic White House aide that anonymously told the Washington Post that Trump was willing to accept $2.3 billion, I believe it was, rather than the $5.6 he originally sought. But the Democrats still refused to budge. So it'll be interesting to see how things play out. It's definitely going to be a different game, so to speak, starting tomorrow. And not for the best, but I would like to see Trump fight. Now he should have no delusions about the nature of the political system in America. He should have no delusions about the way things work and what needs to be done. So if anything is going to change in America, it's going to change and through the presidency, that is. It's going to require a president who comes in like a wrecking ball and wields the executive branch, the power invested in the executive branch, like a wrecking ball. And we haven't seen that quite from Trump yet, but I'm hoping that this government shutdown signifies that he is willing to move in that direction. So for the activism roundup, well, given that we had Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, and New Year's Day, not a ton of activism happened. However, there was quite a bit of flying that occurred. So props to everyone, and thank you to everyone who didn't let the holiday season be an excuse for laziness. Thank you, guys. And then also, the Colorado chapter looks like they had a good New Year's celebration. It looked like it was both productive and enjoyable. And, you know, broadcasting these things on social media is good. It lets people know what's happening behind the scenes and so forth. So before we get too far into things, thank you, Ian, for posting the merch announcement. Not only for posting the merch announcement, but handling all of the merch orders. Thank you for doing that. Let's get through this merch. We're going to have new merch probably February or March. And so most of the stuff here is not going to be – it's stuff that isn't basically – it's not going to be available again, right? We'll probably have – we do have similar stickers to these and so forth, and we'll probably have similar things. But some of the stuff, like the shirt, for example, is not going to be something that you can get in the future. So we'll have different shirts, of course, but – buy merch. It's a great way to support the organization and to get something back in return. And included within the merch category, although I handle these books, is Europa Books. So go to the bookstore, check out the two books that we have. We have Race and the American Prospect and Intelligence and National Achievement. Or sorry, no, that one is sold out. We have Race and the American Prospect and Ethnopolitics by Sam Francis. If you go on Amazon and you see how much Race in American, the American Prospect is selling for, and then you look at our price, you'll see that it's maybe 20% of the price that it's going for. So you're getting a rare book that contains some really insightful essays for an extremely discounted price. So this is something that's definitely valuable. And I probably shouldn't have to say this, but yeah, if you decide that you want to buy 20 and then sell them on Amazon, I'm not going to sell them to you. So let's only buy these if you want to actually read them. I've read Ethnopolitics. It's really good. Some of you heard me talk about it a few firesides past. Haven't read Race and the American Prospect yet. I'm looking forward to reading through a few essays. I don't know if I'm going to read it front to back just yet, but I should be getting started on that once I'm finished with what I'm reading now. But anyways, keeping you guys, just as a reminder, still in this lawsuit, still paying $2,500 a month in basically $2,500 a month for our legal counsel. And that's something that is not going to change anytime soon. So the organization does need money. And thank you to the patrons. Without the patrons, we would not be able to function as an organization. I'm a patron. You all should become patrons. The tiers are 50, 150, 300. We have a different patrons server. We do patrons voice calls where I let you guys know a little bit more what's happening behind the scenes, what we've accomplished that month, what we're going to be doing in upcoming months, too, so you guys kind of have an understanding of where your support is going. So if you're interested in becoming a patron, and I would strongly encourage everyone to get involved, please get in touch with Argument of Perigee. We need your money. IE needs your money. There are a lot of fundraisers out there, a lot of stuff in the Trump world that we would like to throw our money at, but there's just so much more money out in Trump world than there is in here. We need to fund, we need to make sure our money generally goes towards the dissident right. It's the idea between dumb money and smart money, right? So dumb money is money that there is tons of, right? Money that goes to the NRA, money that goes to to Trump. I'm not saying never donate to these things, but we need, smart money. Smart money is money that goes to the movement. So we need to make sure that we get as much, we keep as much of that coming here as possible. Because these bigger causes, they're going to get funded. They're going to get funded by people who don't really want to support us. So anyone who supports the dissident right should largely keep their contributions within the dissident right. Because obviously we have a very special role to play in everything that's unfolding in American politics. So, yeah. Please buy books. Please buy merch. Please consider becoming a patron. This organization is more than a Discord club, as you know. So much administrative work that happens, and if we can't pay people to do this stuff, and no one's making probably above minimum wage when you cancel out, then yeah, the organization can't get by. So,
That is enough about that. I was asked to relay a message from Carlton, who couldn't make it tonight, but you will be hearing from him at an upcoming Fireside one of these weeks. But the IE Literature Server released an exciting announcement last night. We will be hosting and interviewing Jared Taylor for our Meet the Author segment. This is taking place on the IE Literature Server February 10th. And he asked me to promote it, so I am promoting it. You guys should join the IE Literature Server. Looks like we're getting started. The IE Literature Server is getting started on White Identity by Jared Taylor. You know what? I actually still haven't read that, so maybe I will jump in on that. I'll have to talk to Carlton, but I've been meaning to participate in the Literature Server for a while. I've just had a quite a big backlog that hasn't exactly been in line with where the Literature Server was headed in terms of the books that they were reading and so forth, so that's why I haven't. But February 10th on the Literature Server, Mr. Jared Taylor will be there to talk about his book White Identity. I strongly encourage you guys to get involved. Moving along to the conference. Many of you are sick of hearing about the conference at this point. You will be even sicker, if you can believe it, of hearing about the conference by the time the conference comes around. However, it is imperative that we ensure as much, as high a percentage of participation in the conference and attendance at the conference as possible. It's best to sign up earlier so we know exactly how many people to expect, so there aren't any surprises. Even if 300 people end up showing up, if 90% of them sign up the week before, well, that's not going to be great. I don't think it'll happen just like that, but the sixth channel from the top is down from the top is Leading Our People Forward 2019. That is the name of our conference. You will see an invitation in there. You will see a conference registration calendar. We'll go through all of this because many of you have heard me say it 1,000 times already. But just keep in mind a few important dates here. On the 21st of this month, registration is going to increase by $20. It's not increasing to $20, implying that it is less than $20 to register for the conference now. It's $125 to register for the conference now, and it will go up to $145 if my math is correct. So let's, the spirit of saving money and getting signed up on time and having the agency to not procrastinate and to plan things ahead of time. I would like for all of you who know that you're going to come to the conference to sign up tonight. Sign up during or after the fireside. It's pretty straightforward. You can get it knocked out. Then you can start worrying about lodging, getting cheaper airfare, sorting out, maybe grabbing a seat in a nearby, in a convoy or in a van that's going to be traveling through your area. And the sooner you sign up, the better your experience will be. The sooner you sign up, the less money you will spend. And the sooner you sign up, the better accommodation and transportation you will be able to secure. So please sign up. And with regard to the location, you are not allowed to talk about the location beyond Appalachia. If we see you doing that in the chat, if we hear you doing that, if we hear that you've told anyone about that, you will be in trouble. You might be asked to, you might have your conference registration refunded and be asked to not attend. So it's we need people who can be careful, who can be sensitive to these things, and to not be reckless. And we do not want the location leaking. And that also means don't talk about the conference outside of IE. Don't tell people on your whatever Discord server, on your Minecraft server. Don't tell people at your local YMCA. Just don't talk about the conference outside of these servers. And if you're talking about it within the server, make sure you're not talking about where it is. Don't ask, don't tell when it comes to this precise location of the conference. If you'll see this, the next date on this registration calendar, which is the 8th of February, cancellation and refund deadline. If you sign up knowing that it's going to be in Appalachia, and you basically realize, and then you get the location, the precise location, you say, "Oh, this is in a part of Appalachia that is further than I was willing to travel." I think that's a little weak. There are going to be people traveling far further than you, and if you do it early, you will be able to afford it. Especially if you're driving, it might just be an extra 2 to 3 hours on the road. Too bad. Suck it up. I'm gonna be driving for 10 hours to get there, and I won't be the person who's driven the most, so it's worth pointing that out. Basically that is that. And if you find out it's too far away and you just can't go, we will refund you by the 8th, but we're not refunding anyone after the 8th. So just plan on canceling by then if you need to. But guys, this is going to be a spectacular event. It's going to be just working on getting some great speakers. The participation should be, you know, attendance should be far higher than it was last year. Last year was great. 150 IE people together is a great time, a great time. Even the Airbnb where we just had like 50 to 60, Lewis's Airbnb, that was, it was great. It was one of the best weekends of my life. I had plenty of other people tell me that as well. Because the sense of solidarity that you have maybe at Amran or something is good, right? You realize, oh, I can talk about these things here. People, they're going to understand a lot of memes, the same culture, listen to the same podcasts. They've read the same articles, right? All of those things. But when it's at IE, I've seen this person post on Discord. Oh, this person knows, you know, my great friend, you know, my really good friend of mine. He was in my chapter but moved to his chapter. The sense of community and fellowship that you will experience at this conference is something you're probably not going to get anywhere else. I've never felt anything like it, and I was riding, I was still riding the high from the conference months and months afterwards. And of course, the action on that on Sunday is going to be superb. Wayne's got some great works, in the, some great stuff in the works. So be sure that you sign up sooner than later. Guys, please remember to keep your questions until the end. Make sure to tag me in them, but I cannot keep up with the chat when I'm going through all of this. I'll let you know when it's time for questions. All right, let's talk about activism in 2019. So we are an activist organization, although we do focus on other things. We do have a big emphasis on community service, networking, interacting with the press when it appears that it will be to our advantage to do so. However, activism is what we're about at the end of the day. And I think we need to alter the way we see activism, the way that our chapters look at activism. Activism shouldn't be something that's a secondary concern. It shouldn't be, maybe we'll do a little activism next month. No, activism should be something that you do every time you get together. It might not always be feasible, but let me remind you, there are actions you can do that require next to no planning. Putting up flyers requires next to no planning. Doing a park cleanup, donating food or used clothes or whatever to a homeless shelter requires next to no planning. And I'm not trying to diminish the efforts of people who have planned these things, but it just goes to show it's not like, oh, we need to create a 200-foot banner and then get everyone together. No. Something that, with an hour or two of planning, you can do. Raise funds at the local level, maybe approach some of the patrons and see if they'd be willing to fund that. And if you guys have projects you want funded, you can come to me. We'll see if we can work something out. But we need to be thinking about activism. Activism and really comes back to the activism content that we put out. It is activism is our telos, and it's what drives membership, what proves that we are serious about what we care about this organization. And it's just what we do. It's what we do. And that's something that I've been reflecting on too, is at our local level. We've been getting together, and we've been doing great community events and networking behind the scenes with Jared Taylor, Roger Devlin, other people in the area, having big get-togethers and really just having a great behind the scenes community here. Getting involved with people who write for conservative publications and stuff. There's a great network here in D.C. But the point is that I've just been thinking about that. We should be doing flyering every time we get together in addition to this. We should be doing a park cleanup every time we get together in addition to this. Because look at it this way. When you're getting together with IE people, what content are you going to put on Twitter and other social media, just social media in general? What kind of content are you going to have that's going to send a message to people saying, this is who we are, this is where we are in the case of a particular chapter, and this is what we do, this is what we're about. Even if you're just broadcasting that guys are getting together, girls, getting together to go out to some kind of Christmas market, or you're getting together to do a speaking workshop, right, an oration workshop, then you are telling people this is what happens behind the scenes, and that is content we can put on social media, assuming everyone knows that their faces and the back of their heads are going to be featured there as well, and that's kind of a basic thing to keep in mind. But just keep that in mind every time you get together. What content is being created? And if you're not creating any content, you know, if your chapter is getting together once a week every month, or once a week, you know, and for months has no content, or even for a month has no content, then your chapter is doing something wrong. And, you know, coordinators, they've got lives. Often they have wives. They can be quite busy. So if you see that your chapter isn't putting out enough content, stand up. And by stand up, I don't mean like confront your coordinator. Go to your coordinator and say, hey, I've noticed we've not been putting out a lot of content. You're doing a great job, but I would like to help out. I would like to ensure that every time we plan an event, we're doing a park cleanup. We're doing flyering. We're going out talking to college students. I'll get into some of that stuff in a little later. But guys, we're an activist organization. I need to see more activism. And we will be getting you a full activism list. A very thorough activism list that gives you specific examples of types of actions that you can go out and do. And that's something we should have had for you since day one. And since I took over, I'll take credit for that. I'm not going to blame Nathan, but, you know, in my defense, I have recommended the book Beautiful Trouble. This should be a must read. Rather, it is a must read, although I will confess I haven't read the whole thing. So I should get on that too. But I have read the part of, you know, basically the first half of the book that goes through, they call it tactics. Perhaps a bit militant, but that's not what we're going for here. And I want to preface this before I post the book. I want to say this isn't some of these things might not work for us. You can, you know, judge that for yourself. And let's keep in mind that if you want to do an action, the way to do that, go to your coordinator, work with them on something. The coordinator will fill out a report and give it to the activism department, and the activism department will work with the coordinator and I believe maybe the main activist involved as well and sort something out. So under no circumstances are you to go off and do something on your own. And, you know, if it doesn't turn out terribly, we're still probably not going to post it, but we might not kick you out. If it turns out you go off and do something weird, and even if you say, oh, I wasn't representing IE, everywhere you go, you're representing IE. You know, there's always the potential that you get outed as being an IE member, and then that will be linked back. So I'll give you one example. One guy, I won't say what region he was in, was really upset by something that happened on a college campus recently. And the particular instance was absolutely infuriating. It's one of those things you read about in Breitbart or the Daily Caller, and you say, man, that's insane. And Yeah, I mean, I totally understood where he was coming from, but I get a message from someone saying, hey, so-and-so drove like 7 hours to go to this college unannounced, and he has a plan to go do like a one-person demonstration there. And I thought to myself, why is he doing that? Why, first of all, why didn't he go through the right procedure, right? I mean, that's just kind of an irritant for that reason, right? People not following the rules. Organizations have to, you know, we're built on rules. If people don't follow certain protocols, it's not going to work. And also just confused. Why would you want to do it alone? A one-person demonstration. Guys, if you get 50 people on a street corner chanting something, high energy, smiling, with a message, that's a demonstration. If you get one person screaming on a street corner, people are just going to think you're crazy. Like, they're going to think you're probably on meth and they're probably not going to listen to anything you have to say. And it's worth pointing out that this individual decided, he said, don't worry, I'm wearing a face mask, so no one's going to know who I am. I said, oh, a face mask, okay. Yeah, they're definitely not going to think you're insane now. He told me he had, like, bunny ears on, too. So it was, thankfully, no content was published. And I told him, like, look, if you go do this, like, you're going to be really violating IE rules. But he was like, look, I already drive 6 hours up here. I need to do it. We'll talk about what that need says in a minute. But, yeah, he messaged me 5 minutes later on Discord after. He was like, yeah, I did it. And I guess I look pretty crazy. I probably shouldn't have done it. And I was like, yeah, we're not wrong. We've been – even though we've only been doing this for a few years, we've been doing this for longer than the average person that's joined, because most members in IE haven't been in for as long as I have. And, you know, that kind of – this type of experience you can read books like Beautiful Trouble, which I'm about to post, and get a pretty good overview of activism, and you can learn quite a bit from the right, from GI and so forth, from the left as well. But when it comes to doing identitarian activism in America, that's a very, very specific niche thing. And a lot of the experience, the know-how, and so forth, is stuff that only we know. Only people in this organization really know it. So when people come in and they say, oh, I want to do things this way, I want to do things that way. Well, lo and behold, when we, you know, our protocols are there for a reason. There's probably a precedent set for why you don't do this stuff. But you know what? I can tell you this without having any activism experience. I think I would be able to tell you that standing on a street corner wearing a face mask and bunny ears, screaming for 5 minutes, and then walking away is not going to accomplish much of anything. But yeah, let's talk about when he said he really wanted to do it. What does that mean? Well, that means that he is responding. He's not thinking strategically. He's thinking indulgently. He feels an inner compulsion to go do a certain thing. And I can sympathize with that. In that instance, he was pissed about what happened. He was absolutely upset, and he had the right to be so. However, we can't just operate emotionally, right? Emotions certainly have their role, of course. You know, it's good to be passionate about these issues, but passions and emotions must be – both of those must be tempered by reason and by strategy. And above all else, we have to be strategic. We have to constantly be analyzing everything that we're doing, thinking, is this going to work out to our advantage, or is this going to make us look like idiots, right? And I think one of the big splits, it's, you know, between the optics debate, right? You got the guys that want to march around with the armbands and the plastic skull helms and whatever else, the skull masks, right? It's really, really spooky stuff, right? They're doing that because they want to. They're doing that because it makes them feel good. And we say, hey, that's not working. Hey, that's not a good thing to do. They get offended because I think on some level they know. Some level they're like, yeah, this is fun. It's fun to go out there and be a villain. So that's my take on that. But anyways, let us talk about Beautiful Trouble. I'm going to post this book in announcements. I don't think this is illegal since we're not hosting it. And since it's on the internet, it's actually one of the first results that comes up. So I'm pretty sure these leftists don't care that it's available for free. So this is this book. Here it is. Tactics, which contains dozens of examples of activism, is about 92 pages. So we could all read 92 pages. And you can actually, even if you don't want to read 92 pages, at the different types and say, hey, you can look at the table of contents and say, all right, advanced leafleting and artistic vigil and banner hang, awesome, I want to read about that. Well, we've actually done that one probably more than all of the others on here, so maybe you don't need to read that, but you know, never it's not, there's no issue touching up on some of these things even if we're employing these tactics. I would recommend you read the theory as well. I've read some of it, but it's not I haven't done that in quite some time. And actually, I do need to touch up on this. So advanced leafleting, that's the first one they have here. And it's very the way that the information presented is very good. It's very structured. That's the word I'm looking for. Common uses, practitioners, further insight. So common uses of advanced leafleting to get important information into the right hands, right? Well, it sounds like something we're interested in. Practitioners, Center for Tactical Magic, Institute for Applied Autonomy. I don't know what that is. But so this basically has some information on, and it has the key principle at the end. So the key principle here is kill them with kindness. Pissing people off won't do your cause any favors. Wow, imagine that. So don't piss people off. Disarm with charm, and maybe your audience will let you guard down long enough to hear what you have to say. Wow, so you're telling me that going out there and wearing a skull mask and screaming racial epithets isn't the path to victory. Wow, that's – I don't know. It sounds like these leftists who have succeeded quite a bit, it sounds like they're optics cucks. What's up with that? I thought Antifa, they don't have to worry about optics, so we don't. But anyways, you have plenty of others. Artistic Vigil – it's pretty good. We've done a few of these. You could. We've done the. I don't think we've quite done exactly what they're thinking of here, but we did do the what was that? The South Africa, the first part of the South Africa demonstration, which to date is our most popular tweet by far. I think we got close to 6,000 likes on that tweet, and yeah, it was good stuff. So, anyways, I'm not going to go through all of these, but I'll read off some of the names here. I want all of you who are interested in doing activism, which is probably most of you, read through this. Get some ideas on your own. You don't need to wait for your coordinator to say, hey, we're going to go do this. No, you can say, hey, I want to do this. Here's a good action. Coordinators like to hear that. As long as you're not stepping on their feet and you're not suggesting, you know, just really dumb ideas. And I'd like to believe that our coordinators are nice enough to not be mean to you if your ideas are misguided and naive. It's kind of our job to guide people in the right direction there. So some of these ideas, let's read them off. Fancy leafleting, artistic vigil, banner hang, blockade, creative disruption, creative petition delivery, debt strike, culture jamming. Let's talk about culture jamming. What is that? Page 28. Let's take a look. Common uses of culture jamming. Altering the meaning of a target's messaging or brand, packaging critical messages as highly contagious media viruses. Ah, okay, so for instance, the Neo-Situationist, I have no idea what that means, magazine Adbusters has created American flags bearing corporate logos in place of stars. Yeah, I don't think they're complaining about corporations too often these days. The traditional flag, which is often used to quash dissent by equating America with liberty and progress, is made to communicate its own critique. Corporations, not the people, rule America. So, yeah, that's a cool form of activism that can be done. Now, I'm not going to read through all of these, although I'm actually really eager to kind of go through those. I'm excited to read through these and get some new ideas for activism to do at both the local and the national level for 2019. But I think there's a good way to look at activism, and that is activism is art. We should be creative with activism. We should make it interesting and engaging. Activism is like art because art, at the end of the day, is a way to manipulate form, color, language, you know, music, sound, human expression to achieve a desired effect. And that is exactly what activism is as well, right? When we drop a banner, right? That is essentially a piece of artwork that we made. That is a craft that we made. That is a piece of canvas that has been painted, and we are trying to influence what is going on in people's heads when they see it, right? So there's no, we should get creative with it. We absolutely should. If you have artists in your chapter, get them involved. Think about an art installation that you can do, and then you can leave at a college campus. Something that's going to grab people's attention. Something that's going to get people talking. But anyways, there are many ideas, and we're going to be demanding more diversity from activism. We're going to be demanding more activism and more diversity. So 2018 was spectacular. Our activism department flourished. It exploded. We did our best actions yet. Almost every action was our best action yet at the time. That is largely due to Wayne and Lewis for doing such a great job in the activism department. But yeah, we now that it's 2019, we want to increase the amount of activism that we're doing, and we want to diversify the activism as well. So guys, read this book. At the very least, go through the examples and think about what you can implement in your chapter. Have fun with it. This is supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be engaging, and it's supposed to be meaningful, and it is. You'll have doing some awesome action like this, it's going to grab people's attention, is going to give you far more fulfillment and meaning than playing video games, than sitting at home, staring at the wall, looking at Facebook, right? So we need to be more engaged. Now, one form of activism I want to see more of is going to college campuses. I would like to see you guys going to college campuses and talking to students. Now, does that mean that you go up and you start yelling about white identity? No, you can do that if you wanted, but I think most, let's be honest, I think a lot of people are hesitant about to go to college campuses and talk to students. But we need to get over that. We need to get over it. Now, for the people who just can't do activism, that's fine. No one's going to be forced to do this, but there are a lot of people that are willing to put themselves out there. But just be aware of your surroundings. If you're going on the UC Berkeley campus, don't do it at night. And just keep in mind who you're talking to, and so forth. I would almost say if you're at one of these like extremely left-wing campuses, just be extra cautious when you do it. In my experience, I did quite a bit of this at SDSU, which is my alma mater. If you're targeting like fit-looking white guys, they're going to at the very least be somewhat receptive. Like they get it, they get what's going on. They all, you know, quite often they do a lot of the talking. They're like, "Yeah, what's up with this? The, you know, bashing white people all the time." Because again, these guys go to you'll talk to people who. In one case, like I was talking to one guy, he was like already there, but he had never heard of the alt-right or anything, as we were calling it back then. But he was like, I had to like cut the conversation short because he was like, he just kept wanting to go on and on about this stuff. And I was like, that's great. But print out a sheet that has an email list and be like, hey, why don't you give me an email? And phone number would be good too. This is very important because handing stuff out and talking to people, good, that's all right. It raises consciousness, I suppose. But we want to get these people involved. We want to get them active. We want to invite them out to an event and print out a blank email list, get people to sign up. When we did this at AMREN, which, by the way, was a really great event, and I hope to see you all at AMREN this year, some of the best people that we brought on last year, we brought on from AMREN, Gimlet, who's our new CTO, doing great work. And he's also our Utah coordinator, too. Met him at AMREN, had a conversation with him. You know, I just struck up a conversation with him in the hallway. Now he's, you know, one of our best guys. So we need to get out there. We absolutely do need to get out there. And it's really great to get pictures of us talking to college students. You know, we need to show that we're out there. We're totally confident in our ability to express our ideas, and we're not afraid of the taboo. We're not afraid of left-wing violence. We are going to continue speaking our mind, exercising our First Amendment rights, and there's nothing they can do to stop us, right? So I would like to see you guys go out there and talk to college students. I would like you to move, do it for the first time with your coordinator. If you don't have a coordinator in your area and you'd like to do that, please get in touch with me, because you'll realize that it's going to be a learning experience, right? In my experience, it's best to have a really good, it's kind of like a sales pitch, right? I did some, or canvassing, right? I did some canvassing door to door for an environmentalist company when I was in college. It was kind of a weird job and I only did it for 3 months, but you start off with the pitch, right? When they open the door, you know exactly what you're going to say. And, you know, when you start the conversation along by you know, starting with a pre-packaged pitch or introduction, you know where it's going to go. You might not know 100%, but you know that it's going to go in your direction. Then you're going to be able to – the more you do it with the same pitch, the more you kind of realize that people are going to respond. You know, it's like a video game, right? They're like five dialogue options, right? People are going to respond in a certain, you know, if you say, hey, how do you feel about America building a wall along the southern border? How many possible options are there? It's going to be like indifferent, yes, no, and then there will be different explanations for why. But you can kind of start to piece things together in your head so that you're prepared. But yeah, when you're going out to talk to college students, think about what some good introductions might be. Some good pitches might be. One really good one is, hey, how would you feel if there was a organization on campus that for people of European heritage? And generally, in my experience, they're all like, sure, why not? You know, even like just the apolitical white bro types, they, even if they're not pro-white, they're at the very least, they haven't been conditioned to see that as an issue. And when you start talking about how, like, yeah, it's all these, you know, liberals and so forth, they act like you're, you know, some kind of lunatic or, you know, extremist just for being part of a group like that. But, you know, they have groups like that for other races on campus. They'll be like, oh, yeah, wow, I never thought about it that way. So do this, hand out materials, put up flyers as you're doing it. Get signatures. I want to see people doing this. In fact, the first person who goes out and does it, I will mail you 5 copies of Ethnopolitics and 5 copies of Race and the American Prospect to your chapter. And that is the first chapter to do it and have post the pictures in the activism photos. And anyone else who does it this month will receive one free book of each for you or someone else in your chapter. So yeah, I would like you guys to get out there, get involved. And here's another idea I would like to, you know, in the spirit of being more active in growing this organization, here's another idea. So we've talked about this in the past, but creating front groups is a good way to get involved with to bring people of like minds to you. Now, are we already doing that at IE? Yes, but it is somewhat dangerous to go out and say, you know, if you guys are worried about getting doxxed, which many of you should be, it can be dangerous to. I mean, you guys know what I'm getting at here. It can be somewhat of a risk to go walking around saying I'm with IE. Some of you might not be confident doing that. It's okay. I would encourage you guys to do that in the right situations, and I just did with the college outreach thing. But it can be useful to have front groups. Or say you live in San Diego, create a San Diego MAGA group, and you can create a Discord server, you can create a Facebook page, you can get people involved. And chapters that have – there are IE chapters doing this, so I'd like to see more of them do it. And they have facilitated recruitment to Identity Europa through these front groups. Now, when you have a front group like that, it allows you to attract people of like mind while at the same time having less – drawing less ire from the SPLC, right? And that's – you know, it's – there are pros and cons to being very explicit, and there are also pros and cons to being implicit, right? The pros and cons of being explicit is you're going to be spreading the right message, an unadulterated message. That's what we do. There are also pros and cons between, or rather, you know, some of the other benefits of doing that is you know that you're, anyone who is attracted to Identity Europa, they're not going to mistake us for being, you know, like a Bill Mitchell-esque Trumpian group. And we shouldn't be hostile to other Trump supporters, but yeah, it's... it's not what we're about, and we want to attract people who get which issues we care about. But the cons to being very explicit are that you end up, obviously, you paint a huge target on yourself. That's what we see with us. But, you know, someone has to do it, and that's do I have to pay you. That's a risk we're willing to take. But with the front groups, the pro is that you'll still be allowed to attract people. You'll have less of a target on you, so you'll the doxx risk is smaller. But the purpose shouldn't be just to grow a MAGA group. It should be to bring people in and to get people involved in stuff like this. So I'd like to see you guys do that. All of you can do that in your local chapters. Maybe that can be your niche, right? If you're looking for a niche in your local chapter, if you have agency, if you're not the kind of guy who's just going to sit back and wait for someone else to do something, yeah, create a local MAGA group. Do something along those lines. And you can even create social media pages. I already went over that. You create flyers, hand them out to people at Trump rallies, things of that sort. So I strongly encourage you guys to get involved like that. I would like to remind you of a few more things before we go to the Q&A. First of all, please remember to pay your dues on time. It is a colossal headache trying to get people to pay their dues. The best thing you can do is pay yearly, because then you save money and you know you only have to be reminded once, if at all. The second best thing is to pay bi-yearly, every 6 months, and that will ensure that you do save money and you only have to get reminded twice a year, tops. If you're paying once a month and we have to remind you every month and you're just constantly falling behind, it's kind of pleb-tier, for lack of a better term. So please don't be the guy that needs to be reminded to pay your 10 a month. If you're going to pay 10 a month, then just set a reminder on your phone, and then you can basically go from there and know that you're good to go every month, though, when it's time to pay. I sometimes forget, so I haven't had to be reminded, but, you know, it's very easy to forget these things. And also for the younger members, as you get older, if you're not writing things down, if you're not setting reminders on your phone, you should count on forgetting these things. That's kind of where I am at now. If I forget to put something down on my phone, then there's a very good chance I'm going to forget it. It's not because I like to believe it's not because I'm stupid, but it's generally, yeah, just because there's so much else going on, so many other things to keep track of. Your memory might get a little worse, but I think that most people's commitments tend to multiply as they age, and that is a good thing, particularly if you have family and so forth. If you have nothing going on in your life, then that's not a good thing. So the fact that there are tons of things going on in your life generally is a good thing. But what else do I have here? It's mostly at least my notes. Well, just to wrap up, I would like to remind you guys important things that we went over. Diversify your activism. Try to make your chapter easier. Try to, and this is something that I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I think I will. Be recognizing people and chapters for their contributions. We're going to be having an awards ceremony of sorts at the conference. And, I'm not going to say what the categories are, but maybe things like Member of the Year, Chapter of the Year are things that can be done. So basically 2018 is over, but there's plenty of time in 2019 to make your chapter the best. I like good-natured, emphasis on good-natured, good-natured competition, different chapters, because that with economics tends to promote people to above and beyond do things. Why you're leaving. If you just stop paying dues and drop off and you stop responding to messages, I'm just going to think, and if anyone asks me what happens to you, I'm going to say that you decided that you don't really care about this anymore and you were ashamed and embarrassed. And as a result, you didn't have the conviction. You didn't have the, you didn't have the decency to explain why you were leaving. So keep that in mind. And also, if you leave and you make up reasons, I will know. And again, am I going to do anything? No, of course not. But I had one guy left 6 months ago, and he was a good member. He didn't really go to that many meetups, but he helped out with other things. And he kept giving me reasons for why he was leaving, and I was like, I kept pointing out why they were bad reasons. And eventually he was like, yeah, I'm just really worried about getting doxxed. And I was like, oh, okay, there it is. Well, I'd like to remind you guys, you should probably be – I'm not going to say our – roster isn't safe. It's pretty safe. Anyone who touches it has been forced to sign an NDA, and the number of people who have access to the whole thing is very small. But, if I were you and I had a lot to lose and I didn't want to get doxxed, which you probably should – all of those should apply to you, I would be on the roster under an alias. I wouldn't be using my real name or my face on Discord, Slack, or anything else, definitely not on Twitter, and I would pay dues in cash. Now, we go to great lengths to maintain your security, but if you are not doing all of those things and you're worried about your OPSEC and you're like, oh man, I might need to like leave this Discord server before someone finds out I'm on this Discord, it's silly. your real name is listed on the email, well, it's something that you might keep in mind. But yeah, so that's basically that. I just want to keep you guys, just want to remind you guys that, and I'll summarize, I'll wrap up on this note. But after Charlottesville, we saw mass doxings. It was terrible. People, you know, lost their livelihoods. Many people bounced back, and I think it's kind of damage done was a little over-exaggerated in some cases, though certainly not in all. But we've demonstrated that we can go out there and do activism without getting doxxed, without ruining your life. And all it took was leadership, and I'm not just saying me, leadership in the broader dissident right, wanting people to be safe, wanting people to thinking, how can we do activism but also maintain, how can we do high levels of activism, show our face, get out there, not wear masks, not wear bandanas, while at the same time ensuring that our members, as few get doxxed as possible. And as a result, it was like maybe five, if not less, people who got doxxed during 2018. And any person getting doxxed is tragic. I'm not really interested in victim blaming. I think we can definitely learn from what people have done wrong without it being, you know, again, a blaming thing. But we just kind of keep in mind, look, what you do on the internet is probably what's going to get you doxxed, unless you commit a crime. Because if you commit a crime, even if it's just vandalism, even if you use spray glue, which we tell you not to use, and you put that up somewhere, yeah, then, you know, if you get a vandalism charge, it'll be public knowledge, and they'll write a news article about it. Don't post anything on social media under your real name, under your face, that is dissident. And by that, I mean anything above something, you know, the most lukewarm of conservatives would post. But look, if you're self-employed, I did a whole thread on this. If you're self-employed, if you're employed in the movement, if you're, I don't know, won the lottery, sure, yeah, say it under your real face and name. That's definitely a good thing. I had people calling me out for that thread saying, you know, like Matt Parrott, right? Saying, shouldn't be encouraging people to hide in the corners. And it's like, what are you talking about? I basically said, if you can do it, you should do it. If you can't do it, you should. But, you know, it's very – notice, pay attention. It's very interesting how some, the same people that are trying to get you out in the streets fighting Antifa are the same ones that seem to take issue with people telling you to be careful about how you handle yourself on the internet. It's almost like as if these people want you to be out there getting bashed in the face by Antifa. It's almost as if they want you to get doxxed so, you know, you'll be an undesirable just like them for the rest of your life. And yeah, look, guys, we broke free from some very, very toxic and frankly disturbed individuals, people who are actually just bad people, something that transcends politics. And I'm not trying to self-aggrandize here. I'm not saying you should be thanking me or anything like that, but I just want you guys to know there's things that have happened behind the scenes that would boggle your mind with regard to the depravity and the complete lack of any ethical decency for people within the movement. I'm not talking about people saying let's do bad things to Antifa, though that's, you know, we don't want to do anything illegal, but doxing of people in the movement, threatening that, blackmailing people with their dox by saying, hey, do this for me or I'm going to dox you. I knew people that tried to get away from certain segments of the movement. It was like them leaving a cult. And for certain segments of the movement, it actually is a cult. It totally is. So just keep in mind, not too many – when I took over and I said we're just going to be doing our own thing, I had a lot of well-intentioned people asking me, why aren't we doing stuff with this group? Why aren't we doing stuff with TWP? We should have bigger – we should do – no. No one is asking me that at this point. Literally no one is. And I've seen how people in the broader alt-right community, the smarter ones, they're not even saying that anymore too. So not only are people outside of IE basically being forced to admit that we're right, but people outside as well are doing the same. So just keep in mind, guys, just because someone is pro-white, just because they, you know, like the same podcast as you, does not mean you're a good they're a good person. Now, I'm not saying everyone in the alt-right. I'm not saying, like, you know, Jesse Seventh Son is a bad person or Mike Enoch's a bad guy, but and I'm not lumping them in. Those aren't the people telling you to go out and do this stuff anymore. They've kind of learned the lesson as well. So, yep, just keep that in mind. be careful who you trust. Keep in mind that outside of IE, in the broader quote-unquote movement, you will find some bad people. You'll find some good people too, but you just got to be very careful. See, we're talking about screenshots and stuff here. Kind of missed out on that. But anyways, guys, that is enough for me. Feel free to open. I'll open it up to questions, comments, concerns, and all of that. You know, we got some people ready already. V. Balboa, if everyone is interested in becoming a union plumber, is willing to move to southeastern PA region for a good paying job, please DM me.
Ooh.
Yeah, guys, if you're one of those people for whom the employment section of my New Year's announcement applies, here you go. You can make pretty decent money working as a plumber. You'll get benefits that you'll transfer over to your kid. You can make a good living. And for a lot of people, that's a job that they'll enjoy. And I think southeastern PA, if you're living in like L.A., or San Francisco or something. And I think you'll be surprised at how cheap the cost of living is in some parts of the East Coast, probably southeastern PA, although I don't know. But the two-bedroom that I'm living in D.C. Not D.C., sorry, it's in Virginia, about 2 hours away from D.C., I'm paying $600 a month. And when I lived here by myself, it was $600 a month. Now that I have a roommate, it's $650. The landlord increased it a little bit, understandably so. But – yeah, for the guys that are just in these hellish cities and, you know, don't have like a really good job, you probably should get out. It's gonna be hard raising a family when, you know, these cities are demographically doomed, they're polluted, they're crowded, the price of housing is skyrocketing, right? So, you know, let's have this be the year that everyone gets serious about this. Build the kind of life that you want. That you deserve, but it's not going to fall into your lap. You have to actually take people up on offers like this. So if you're interested, get in touch with Balboa, and thank you, Balboa, for promoting that. Rabbit Sith, I'm reading Culture of Critique and Protocols of the Elders of Zion right now. Well, there you go. What would you recommend that I pay attention to the most? Are these good books for an IE member to read? Well, I haven't read the Protocols. From what I've heard, they are forgeries. I'm sure a lot of the stuff, or the Protocol singular, is a forgery. I'm sure some of it's true, even if it's a forgery, right? If they're talking about Jewish over-representation and things, that's fine. First and foremost, under no circumstances do I want anyone in IE publicly discussing the Protocols of the Elders of Zion. That is a great way just to make you look like a kook. Now, again, I'm not calling you a kook, and I'm sure if I read that book, I'd say, well, some of this is happening, maybe some of it isn't. So I think that's one that's just I would never recommend an IE member reads it. But if you want to read that just to kind of be able to understand somewhat of a historic text, then that's good. But just don't promote it, please. Culture of Critique. I will confess I've read a few chapters. I haven't read the whole thing. I think that the general argument of the Culture of Critique is probably sound, although I think Dr. McDonald takes some – I mean, it goes beyond just saying Jews act in their ethnic interests. I think there might be some things that are incorrect. But yeah, like the main thrust of the book, it's absolutely, absolutely correct. It's something I've been meaning to read lately. And, you know, there's actually one copy in the culture of the Culture of Critique in the books that arrived from our unnamed benefactor who mailed me literally hundreds of books. There was one copy, and Matt claimed it for himself, like, right away. He was like, oh, I'll take this, that, and yeah. So Matt got the copy of Culture of Critique, but there's no issue in reading the Culture of Critique. Just keep in mind, some people read that book, and then they think that they need to go put up, like, Culture of Critique flyers. It's not really what we're about. There's a time and place to talk about Jewish overrepresentation and things, but from a strategic point of view, more than other things, like when you start talking about, I'm of the opinion, and you guys maybe we can agree to disagree. I'm of the opinion that it's more important to get people on board with, you know, preserving a mostly white country than it is with the JQ, right? And obviously they're related, but if you had to choose one or the other, which would you choose? I would go for the white identities, the you know, demographics, immigration, stuff like that. Particularly if someone is just totally apolitical or they're just a normie conservative, it's far easier to get them to move along the lines. But yeah, if you find someone who is just wants all of it and they're open-minded, and you can tell, okay, this guy's ready for all of it, then yeah, that's when you can talk to them about that issue. But as Dr. McDonald talks about, he said that no one below an IQ of 120 who hasn't read like dozens of books on the subject should talk about it. Maybe that's a bit harsh, but there are very important nuances on the so-called Jewish question that are very important to keep in mind. For example, the Jews aren't a single hegemonic, or rather a single homogeneous group. There are Jews that are against Israel. Wow, imagine that. And there's Jews that are pro-Israel, right? You've got the Soros types, you've got the Netanyahu types. I'm not saying any of them are necessarily our allies, but it's just it's a subject that requires quite a bit of nuance. And probably talk about that for hours, but I'm going to wrap up there. Sonny, can you give Pete Dietzel a shout-out for his respectable activism of donating U.S. flags to local businesses? Included an IE flyer in the flag box is Peak Optics, Photos and Activism Channel. Hadn't had a chance to see that. That is indeed Peak Optics. Thank you, Pete Dietzel. Rick, for Christmas I received a few gift cards to Barnes & Noble. I already bought a Ship of Fools, but I still have about $50 remaining. What books do you recommend? Well, given that you're a coordinator, I would recommend a few books on leadership. Not implying you need books on leadership, but you know, we're all constantly working on improving our knowledge and our abilities. Dedication and Leadership by Douglas Hyde. Leaders Eat Last by Simon Sinek. It's a really good one. Adios America, if you haven't read it. And what's another? How to Win Friends and Influence People is really good. So many of the mistakes I see people make in interpersonal interactions, both within and without the organization, and even just seeing people destroy relationships in general. It's you know, these things could be remedied by reading Dale Carnegie's book. And it's perhaps a bit cheesy, and it's been a bit it's just kind of cliche, I think, just because of how hegemonic it's become. It's basically Dale Carnegie, at least, was a household name for a long time, but yeah, that book is very important. Some people get it intuitively, but it's something that everyone should read at least once. If you're looking for something unrelated to leadership, I am very close to finishing The Passion of the Western Mind by Richard Tarnas. It's not an easy read. It's not the hardest read. It's definitely not as incoherent as Nietzsche can be at times, particularly early Nietzsche. But The Passion of the Western Mind is great because I think most people don't want to read philosophy. I'm kind of in between. Like I can appreciate some of it, but it's not really easy for me. I like reading Nietzsche, but it's not easy by any means. Maybe it's easy to other people. But The Passion of the Western Mind is good because it gives you a relatively concise overview of Western intellectual history starting from ancient Greece, moving up to postmodernism. And I think most people who are somewhat educated will probably be familiar with some of the ideas there, but having it all together in one place is really good because he talks about how it's not important just to understand what Plato taught and then understand Augustine, Thomas Aquinas, Occam. Understanding the individual thinkers is good, and you can get that from Wikipedia, but this book is great because it shows you how each phase of intellectual history develops from one to the other. Like how modernism led to postmodernism, how Kant's critique of pure reason led to some of the uncertainty, right, that led to the postmodern condition, things like that. So it's a fun journey. Not going to ramble about it for too much longer, but I think it'd be good for everyone in IE to have read that because, you know, even if you're not going to read Kant's Critique of Pure Reason, which is probably pretty unreadable, even if you're not going to read, you know, Being in Time or whatever, you'll understand kind of the main historical significance of these particular thinkers. And again, it's The Passion of the Western Mind by Richard Tarnas. I actually looked up his Wikipedia page the other day to see if he wrote anything else, and he actually wrote a defense of astrology for his follow-up book. I was not expecting that. I mean, he's a pretty well-respected scholar, and so the first one was really well-received. But yeah, the second one, he just offers basically a defense of astrology, and he looks at different historical events and the astrological signs that presided over them during... And he weaves this whole narrative based off of it. I don't know if I'll ever be convinced that astrology is real, but it sounds like a pretty interesting read. Joe Cunningham, any updates on when the P.O. box was last checked? The day afterward and the day after Christmas. Was it Christmas? I think it was actually Christmas Day. If you sent me something a while beforehand, let me know. And you can always reach out. You might have reached out already, if you haven't, feel free to do so again, and I'll take a look. I should clarify that the 600 it's a two bedroom duplex. It's not really a house, but I've got a pretty big yard. I don't use it for all that much, except for mowing during the summer. But yeah, again, so for people, and just keep in mind, guys, that your goal should be owning a house, getting married, and having people for not having kids, tell them that they failed at life. That's really absurd. That's crazy. You know, these are still things that we should be doing. And yeah, if you're living in, I don't know, New York City, and you're working as like a waiter or something, I'm not saying that to disparage you. Long-term viability of that. I don't know. Maybe you can find some place within an hour of public transit that's affordable to buy a house. But I'm mostly thinking of like Southern California, like because that's where I came from. And I was thinking, you know, is there a future for me in San Diego working for Red Ice? It's not like Red Ice is paying me minimum wage, but you know, average cost of a house out there is like $500K, and it's probably only going to get more. It's definitely only going to get more expensive, but. Proportionally to the other parts of things, but I mean, we really have gotten screwed over, and I don't blame the boomers because it's the boomer generation who did this, but it's not as if all the boomers are to blame. But real quick, this was an interesting open up my Twitter account, see this tweet that I retweeted. Yeah, so Jeff Giza retweeted, so people born in this is between 1977 and 2016. Average cost of a 4-year degree was $8,077, $20,000 in 2016. And now it's $33K in 2016. And when I first started looking at this, hey, guess what it is now, like 40 years later? 34K. It's insane. It's insane. Let's look at this. Never married percentage. 77, 20%. 2016, 53%. And this is from... yeah, I guess this is from people overall. I could be confused. Homeowners, 77, 48%, 2016, 39%. More people are going to college, though. I guess that's good for something. You know, it's good for the people making money off of that. But guys, I know this is a bit of a tangent, but keep in mind, we have agency, right? Within anthropology, you know, one of the dominant theories is practice theory, and it examines structure versus the dialectic of structure and agency, right? So structure is all of these external societal factors, right? The economy and all of these other things. But there's also agency too. And agency is the individual's capacity to act, individual's capacity to affect change within the face of structural influences. And what I was told by my Marxist college professors is like, oh, structure always wins, man. And in some cases, structure does win. But does it have to win? No. That's the thing. We have been given a more we've been dealt a more challenging hand of cards to play. But we're not going to allow ourselves to be victims. We're not going to whine, oh, things are so bad. The boomers ruined everything for us. Oh, look at these stats. Everything's – no. The reason why I retweet these stats and talk about them is saying, hey, you have to be extra careful and extra mindful about how you live your life in this day and age. Otherwise, you're just going to – your life is going to suck, basically. There's obviously more to life than material factors, but when you're lacking in material factors, all your money's going to rent. And you have no marriage prospects, then things, right? So just keeping that in mind, we have to, you know, this year I want everyone to be very proactive in building, you know, the best life for that they have for themselves, and just keep in mind also demographics too. Yeah, Nemeth says 800 a month in Los Angeles is a studio in a 97% Mexican area. Yeah, I live in a mostly white area. I mean, it's not like – it's probably 70% white. There are minorities around, but it's not ghetto by any means. But, yeah, I understand if you work like in tech or something. Yeah, if you're making good money and you need to be in the city, yeah, there's obviously reasons to be there. But kind of keep that in mind. YT, Damo is just about to suggest how to win friends and influence people. Great minds, as they say.
Oh, yeah, recommending
this. Robin says, I'm of the opinion that talk of dictatorship is a detriment to identitarianism. My personal musings, I think it's important for identitarians to show that white identitarianism does not need to tyranny and bloodshed. Thoughts? Yeah, I don't know if you're referencing one of the interviews I did where I said I think things are heading towards authoritarianism and it's either going to be the right or the left. I actually do think that. I don't know how long of a timeline it's going to be. Maybe it's 200 years, and I would rather it not really happen. But, I don't think that should be a central point of our discourse. That's the kind of thing that, like, anonymous people or people who aren't us should say. They should say, yeah, we need a Caesar, because that's what we do need, right? Again, passing, you know, building a wall, changing legal immigration, these are all things that can be undone. These are all things – you know, maybe the wall would be a little harder to take down, but you can theoretically take down a wall. You can stop guarding it, right? You can do all kinds of things to it. And that's what the Democrats will, in fact, do if Trump accomplishes agenda and they get back into power. So let's always keep in mind that we need a changing of the guard, so to speak, at the very top. And that will involve, you know, maybe, I don't know, nationalizing the media, nationalizing the banks, or just shutting them down, or filling them, you know, through coercion, staffing them with our guys. And we shouldn't delude ourselves into thinking that it's going to play out any differently if we actually see the change that we want, right? I mean, there are ways, I guess you could sign laws that penalize things, but it's just so bad. You know, it's things are just – I'm not pessimistic. I'm not black-pilled, but it's going to take more than enacting a few policies to really mix things up. But yes, one of the worst things that we can do is say, oh, once we get power, we're going to do, you know, here's a list of the, you know, horrendous and unethical things that we're going to, you know, that we're going to do. It's absurd. And I think a lot of the anonymous podcasting got carried away with just, you know, power fantasizing, right? Once we have the ethnostate, we're going to do this to minorities. It's like, oh, that's great. Yeah, you should really be saying that to, I mean, regimes that do bad things to people, like, deny it. They're not out there saying, like, oh, yeah, we're totally just killing all of these innocent men, women, and children. But a lot of these podcasters are just dumb, and they're never going to have power. So, Keller, as far as promoting and networking for IE, have you ever looked into putting flyers through the mail, almost like a penny saver to the masses? I've never considered that. Open to it, though. If we got a list of, like, conservatives, sure, but Mick, how do I become part of a chapter, and is it necessary for me given my location? Mick is reporting in from Hawaii. Mick, I've got bad news for you. I've got great news for you. You are the chapter. You have, by joining IE, you founded the
the Hawaii chapter. We actually had a member out there for a while, and he ended up moving to the continental U.S., where he's now a cornerstone of his chapter. But until we get more people out there, you're on your own. I would encourage you to come to the conference so you can experience what's going on in the organization, see what it's like. We'd love to have you. Flying is a good way to do it. A lot of military in Hawaii, and you know, there's an interesting race dynamic there too. Maybe networking. Maybe you can start a Trump meetup and then, you know, start seeing if people maybe have different views on things. So that's what I would recommend to you. And if you recruit 5 people, you can become the coordinator if you're up to it. So Rabbit Sith, if you think that Kant's Critique of Pure Reason is unreadable, then try reading The Phenomenology of Spirit of Hegel. Yeah, for the record, I haven't read Critique of Pure Reason, so I don't know if it's unreadable. I am sure that Hegel is very unreadable as well, but let's see. Donald Reagan, how did you get to the White House? Have you talked to Molyneux at all? With regard to the White House, 1 second. I learned about a public tour. I said, hey, I should go take this tour. And then I figured I would take some pictures, have people take pictures of me while I was there and post them on social media a week or two later, so that if I did it the day of, people might have more quickly sorted out why I was there and realized that it was a public tour and so forth. I mean, it's a public tour, but they only do it twice a year, and you don't really get to the South Lawn of the White House other than that, unless you've been invited there. Because when they saw the pictures, people were like, wow, he's outside of the Oval Office. That's not normal. And it's not normal. I walked by the soccer field where Barron Trump plays soccer, or where he would be playing soccer if he wasn't playing Minecraft or whatever. It was public tour. Got a ticket there, went in, took the pictures, left, and a few weeks later I posted the pictures to the White House. Spacing out here, I need food. I just posted them to social media, and I was expecting some degree of coverage from the mainstream media, but I was not expecting that. And it was, man, I love it when things like that happen, like when the Today Show interview dropped, and when the White House thing was going around, because it just makes Twitter so fun. It's like it's almost too fun. And it's just crazy to think, like, you have these pictures on this little electronic device that fits in your pocket, and you're able to, sometimes generate a ton of outrage and publicity for yourself. I mean, I had the White House basically say, no, this person was not here. They didn't disavow me. They didn't say, screw this guy. They didn't say, this guy's a white supremacist, we want nothing to do with him. Jonathan Greenblatt wanted that, though, because, Jonathan Greenblatt, leader of the ADL, basically said, he tweeted out, like, Patrick Casey, leader of Identity Europa, was at the White House. Was he invited? Mr. Trump needs to, and then finally the White House issued a statement like, nope, he attended a public tour with 25,000 other people. And which I guess no one else knew about. No one else knew when they do tours at the White House. But yeah, and then Jonathan Greenblatt had to tweet out like, well, okay, on second thought, it appears that Patrick wasn't invited, but still, Trump needs to take a strong stance against. Yeah, that's good. But hey, Trump knows who I am at the very least, so it could be worse. But that is that. Yeah. Have you talked to Molyneux at all? No, I haven't. I think he would like to, but that's the whole thing he's been going on lately. He's pissed off that he can't explore certain ideas. He's all about the arguments. He's all about the logic, the reason, the facts, right? And if you're that kind of analytical guy, yeah, you just want to explore everything. But he can, and he knows that, and he's pissed. A lot of other people are pissed too, guys. If and when this dam breaks, the dam of you can't talk about this, you can't associate with them, that's what we need. We will be elevated, to the forefront of things. Absolutely. Because these people, look, the number of people that think that we're actually Nazis and don't want to associate with us and want us, like, it's very small. And that's because we're actually not Nazis. If we were National Socialists, they would want nothing to do with us. And I don't really blame them, right? It's America.
It's not 1930s Germany. And so, yeah, I mean, it's again, going back to the idea that, like, oh, the normies think that we're Nazis, so screw the normies. I'm not accusing anyone in here of saying that, but it's kind of something I've seen float around in the alt-right. Look, it's not the case. It's not the case. Go out and talk to college students. See what they have to say. Like, you tell them what you're about. Like, even if they're not interested, it's a civil disagreement. Like, most white people, most white people who aren't, like, radical leftists, you know, apolitical white people or conservatives, they might disagree with us, but they're just like, yeah, dude, you have the right to say what you have to say. Like, they don't want to live in a society where they, like, can't publicly associate with us when they can't talk about this stuff. I think it'll get worse before it gets better, but it's just so out of hand, right? Look at Dave Rubin, like, making it his life calling to push back against this stuff. It's they could have just censored us, but they had to go censor Sargon of Akkad and all of these other people who made it very clear that they were not us. So, not the wisest move, but yeah. External Pepsi. Wait, are you saying whites should just migrate out of cities? I thought I heard you advocate against that before. I mean, it goes both ways. When it comes to talking to, I don't think whites should in general leave cities, but I don't have the ability to dictate what hundreds of millions, tens of millions of white people do. If I did, I would say, look, maybe stay put. But when, you know, it's talking to, you know, how many people are in this? 100 people in this fireside chat. I want to see you guys succeed. I want to see you guys live good lives. And I don't want to see you just slaving away in, you know, a city where there's no. But you just got to keep in mind, like, you know, if you're. You don't have to move that far out of the city to still be able to be active in the city. I live 2 hours away from DC. I'm there almost every weekend. I'm there staying active. So you can definitely reap both. You don't have to move to, you know, the middle of the Appalachian Mountains where, you know, there's no cell reception. And, I think the best of both worlds is finding a place where you can maybe be an hour or two at tops away from a city, but still be able to pay cheap rent, still have good demographics. You can find a lot of those places. I don't know how much of that you can find in California, but I can tell you that on the East Coast, there's quite a bit. Carl Schmidt, learn to code isn't actually bad advice. I've met a lot of uneducated programmers that meet and make good money with just enough ability in one or two specific programming languages without the degree. Yeah, it is. It's funny advice. So the learn to code meme came from, I think it was journalists referring to, like, a coal mine shutting down. I'm sure someone has the exact context, but basically, you know, some member of the journalists blue check mark class saying, oh, it's no big deal that industries are shutting down, poor white people just learn to code. And it's like, okay, obviously for, you know, hundreds of thousands or millions of people who are going to be out of work, that's not good advice. Like, oh, yeah, just learn to code. Well, let's face it, a lot of people aren't smart enough to code. Or they're just, you know, they're good at other things. That's fine. But, yeah, when it comes to individuals, that's how I feel. Like, you know, pick yourself up by your bootstraps is, like, good advice to give an individual who needs that extra push. Saying that to society at large when there are huge factors in why millions of people are out of work is not going to be enough. But yeah, I mean, if you're looking for a career to go into, absolutely. I knew a guy back in the San Diego chapter. I don't think he ever joined IE, but yeah, he had a degree in psychology, and he was like, "Oh, now I have a bunch of debt and no job prospects." So he learned how to code, and I think it was 6 to 12 months later, he made good money. Now he was making $130K. So that's. Yeah, absolutely. If you're looking for something to do, that's a good place to do it. Now, maybe some people in tech would take issue. I know they goes both ways, but it's just don't settle for the bare minimum. Don't settle at all, right? Just, you know, if you put in that little bit of extra, if you the difference that putting in an hour a day into coding will make in your life a year or 2 years from now versus if you had spent that hour watching Netflix or playing video games is huge, huge. It's all about how you spend your time. If you have a bunch of distractions, eating up your free time, eating up your energy, eating up your money, you're not going to get to where you want to be. That's part of the reason I gave up drinking. I wasn't like a raging alcoholic, but I was like, you know, this is something that if I wasn't doing, if I was doing other things instead, my life would be better. And you know, compare me back then to where I am now, I'm a totally different person, in a good way. So not everyone has an issue with drinking. If you drink moderately, giving up drinking is probably not going to change anything. But and you have to be honest with yourself. People don't like being honest with themselves. I certainly didn't, and it was very hard. But you know, because we like the things that are bad for us. I think if you look closely and you're honest with yourself, you'll see that, you know, whatever pleasure the drinking or the video games or the endless partying, whatever, I don't know, anime, whatever it is, it's not really that great. What really makes you feel good is being satisfied in life and having a good plan, having, you know, personal success. That's basically, you know, what it's all about at the end of the day. Eckhart Tolle, apologies if I've mispronounced your name. What's a good way to nudge a standard Republican towards our thinking? Demographics. Absolutely. Demographics. That's the main thing. It's just, you know, read Ethnopolitics, the book we have available in the bookstore, and basically talk about that. Mass immigration pushes politics leftward. If you are right-wing to any degree, you should be supporting immigration restriction. Audio, you know, I'm going through Adios America for the first time, and I know this is like totally 2015 tier stuff, but it's a little more explicit than I thought. She's like very condescending about, I mean, she's pretty racist, for lack of a better term, about, you know, she's like, you know, and the audiobook is narrated by her. She's using, it's by Ann Coulter, if anyone doesn't know, but, you know, she's referring to, every time she names, like, you know, some Hispanic or Muslim immigrant, she always says their name in the most sardonic tone. She's like, Imran Khan. But yeah, I mean, I was like, hey, this is pretty explicit. Like, if you replace American with white, it is basically a white nationalist manifesto. And obviously we use the term identitarian, but that's basically, you know, she also kind of makes the point too. It's like, yeah, we liked America before 1965. What is she referring to there? So if we can get everyone on that page, that's good. Now, you start telling those people about shipping blacks back to Africa and whatever, you kind of get outside the realm of possibility. A lot of people aren't going to be interested in that. A lot of people are grounded. They're interested in sensible, achievable policy solutions that don't involve, you know, podcasters taking over the government and, you know, instituting military law. But anyways, yeah, read Tucker's book, read Ann Coulter's book, use those talking points, talk about demographics. Talk about the need to push the white vote. That's Ethnopolitics by Sam Francis. Again, it's like 50 pages, and he very concisely refutes the post-2000 GOP strategy of reaching out to minorities. I mean, some of the statistics in there, some of the numbers in there are really surprising. Actually, they're not surprising. You guys probably already know this stuff. But, you know, if you were to increase the white turnout by 1% for the GOP quite often, that would be the same as increasing Hispanic turnout by like 50%. Now, you know, Peter Brumlow predicted that in his book Alien Nation that even if present immigration trends continue, if you're able to mobilize the white base by, you know, a certain percentage, one that's totally achievable, Republicans will be able to mobilize, win elections in landslides until 2080, right? So that's what we have to tell people. It's like, look, stop reaching out to these people. You know, Hispanics, certain percentages of them vote for the GOP, and they should, because at this point, right, we want to keep the left out of power. We want to keep, it's obviously the GOP isn't perfect, sure, but it's a hell of a lot worse under the left, and there's no third party that's going to win anytime soon. But if you want another Trump candidate, if you want Tucker Carlson in 2024 or something, then we need to win elections. And if you want to win minorities, if you're going to take that position for the sake of devil's advocate or arguing with conservatives, just point out that doesn't work. Jeb Bush, you know, did everything he could, and it didn't work. So, Nick, are there any types of addresses you think would be unwise to send IE materials to when purchasing books? Could I maybe ask you privately to be more clear? Yeah, just so everyone's on the same page, never put or send IE materials near or to
anything remotely left-wing. We don't want to be seen as targeting. We don't need articles going around about how we're targeting, like, don't put a sticker. If you put a sticker up on a mosque or something, or like a diversity center or something like that, you're going to get, like, it might be cause for legal action. You know, because there's a fine line between free speech and targeting and harassment. And, you know, even if they charge you, even if they charge you with it and you don't get convicted, well, guess what? Now you've been doxxed. So, send it to conservative think tanks. Send it to, you know, just people who we want to bring to our side. That's what I would recommend. Henrik, do we have a youth Discord chat? Someone DM'd me on Twitter asking how those under 18 can get involved. We have a very unofficial program. It's not exactly a Discord server. We have a way to kind of keep track of these guys so that when they turn 18, we can get them involved. But they're not members in any sense of the word. So you can tell them to apply normally and just put that they're not 18 on the application. And specify that they won't be members until they turn 18. On that note, what's your opinion on Gen Z? Well, it's amazing how, you know, the generation beneath me is already bewildering to me with just seeing the videos of Fortnite dances, not just people Fortnite dancing, not like the act alone. I mean, it's obviously weird enough on its own, but like they have like classes where people can bring their kids to teach them how to Fortnite dance. And they have like, I've seen like high school talent shows where you got like 20 kids flossing up on stage. And a lot of it comes back to technology. Each new generation is going to be far more technological, far more shaped by technology than the one previous. And in ways that are, as Kaczynski noted, going to be quite often unpredictable, or hard to predict at the very least. You know, Marshall McLuhan was a big proponent of the idea that technology shapes us, right? We develop technology and it changes us. And the key to transcending that is by recognizing, becoming aware of the ways in which technology change us. And it's absolutely true. Absolutely true. So, you know, release a video game and next thing that has a certain dance in it, well, video game blows up. Next thing you know, everyone's doing the dances. People are doing them at IE events, and I have to I haven't smacked them because we're a nonviolent organization, but it's actually Fortnite danced on at Defend the Rockies, which was a whole new level of insolence from one of my most trusted guys. But yeah, anyways, Gen Z, I mean, the whole Gen Z is based thing, I don't know. If there's data to back it up, sure. I think they're probably going to be one of the most polarized generations. But the white kids, honestly, they're going to schools that are like 20 to 30% white. It's like prison. They're forced to be among their own kind. And then, yeah, you kind of have to confront things at that point. So, yeah, I think Generation Z's got high hopes for them. But let's be honest here. Generation Z, at the end of the day, they're just kind of the millennials 2.0. We were the original first generation to be raised on the internet and to have cell phones and things of that sort. So we kind of did it first. Yes, I did remove the anime avatar. Terribly, terribly sorry. Rabbit Sith, I'll donate $10 to have the awu emoji back. Yeah, I don't have an issue with people watching anime in their free time, but it's not something we're really gonna like incorporate into IE. Sam Anderson, Ben Shapiro may just run and maybe win in 2024. Should we be worried about how he will act towards pro-white politics? I mean, I think he'd be a lot nicer than the left, but I don't know. Ben Shapiro, I don't know. That seems kind of far-fetched, but yeah, I guess if he just gets up there and you know, destroys the liberals with facts and reason, then maybe he's got a good chance at it. 2024 is gonna be wild. It really is. I'm looking for 2020, but 2024 is like, who knows what's gonna happen. I just hope we get someone in 2024 that is like Trump on steroids. I hope we start seeing articles about, like, you know, the left saying like, we want Trump back. Brunswick, how do you feel about IE members publicly attending anti-leftist political marches? There's a march in Trenton, New Jersey, against the leftist governor in spring that could be a great opportunity. Absolutely. Absolutely. I support that. Alex, what are your thoughts on direct outreach programs to college Republicans groups offering to provide them with softer identitarian material? You'd have to probably have an in there if they – most of them, if you contact them, they're going to be like, no, I can't do this. Even if they're interested, they'd have to be discreet. So I think the best way for our guys to get to for us to figure that out, for us to do that, is for our guys to get involved in the college Republicans and then from within change it. All right, I have a few things to take care of, but for five more questions, for 5 more minutes, I will address your questions. Chris is posting some very embarrassing picture of me back before I took over, but it's okay. I gave him permission to post that one. Back when I had the long hair and all that. I'm guessing – okay, sorry. Someone just reminded me. I'm guessing a lot of you can't see that image. That's because you don't have – I mean, what you probably see is the gold coin. I haven't seen that in a while, but I think it says something along the lines of you need to have an identity or a gold account to view this image. Well, yeah, basically it just refers to the highest tier of patronage. If you're giving us $300 a month, then you get access to premium content. And, some of the best content on the server has to get censored. It's unfortunate, but, you know, it's just the way it is. We want to be really trying to fundraise for the server, for the lawsuit. So, you know, that's why we created that. But, if you guys want to become an Identity Europa Gold member, then get in touch with Argument of Perigee. Godric, how to get slightly almost getting to purple-pilled GF? Not entirely sure what that means. I if I recall correctly, purple pill refers to, it's one of those 4chan memes relating to, like, is the purple pill when you're, like, woke on aliens and stuff? I don't chakras and things of that sort. I don't really know. Natasha, okay, this is a good question. Is Peter Sweden okay? That's a good question. Some people raised concerns that Peter Sweden was being honeypotted by a relatively unattractive 40-year-old woman on who's actually a member of the French intelligence services. Now, I don't know if that's the case, but I think we can agree that Peter Sweden needs to be defended at all costs. I really like that video of him eating cheese. It's one of him with like a massive block of cheese out by some like frozen waterfall, and he's just it's about 10 minutes of him talking and eating cheese. Godric, what did Sweden really used to be about? Well, apparently mushrooms, if you would you'd believe Peter Sweden. Peter Sweden called me a Nazi. That wasn't very nice. Especially since he totally sees things the same way we do. He had all these old tweets about how it was like a very like Protestant take on HBD, on race differences. He was like, black people descend from the lost children, from the children of Cain, and that's why they have their unfortunate physical
traits or whatever, and then I make a video kind of critiquing his, you know, kind of outrage culture, and he called me a Nazi. Not very nice. Apology accepted, Ian. Nate, next action, defend Peter Sweden. Absolutely. Yeah, the issue with Peter Sweden is that we want to have an accurate understanding of things. He's totally played a role in non-Swedes and not maybe just, you know, non-Europeans thinking that like Europe is worse off, like, you know, it's just so defeatist, like, oh, Europe has fallen. No, it hasn't fallen. Some of these countries are like, most of these European countries are still like upwards of 80-85% white. It's obviously not good. Obviously things need to change. I'm not saying that, but you know, I took a few pictures of me walking around Stockholm the last time I was there, which was last summer, summer 2018, there were people responding like, hey, bro, you got to be careful. You can't be doing that. And I'm like, this person has never been to Sweden. Like, they're just looking at Peter Sweden tweets, thinking that, like, every street corner has, like, a rape or a murder happening on it. It's not the case. In fact, in Sweden, most of the stuff that happens in the suburbs, which is kind of the inverse of – and by stuff, I mean bad stuff. Diversity in action. Most of it happens in the suburbs, which is, you know, kind of the inverse of what happens in our fine country. Godric, memes aside, Peter Sweden makes me wonder how we end the stop punching right thing that everyone says about when you disagree with someone like him. You end it by still doing it. You still critique. That whole thing's a little weird. I think there are some things that should be settled, like behind the scenes, some disagreements depending on with whom. You know, if I have an issue with like something Fuentes says or James Alsup says, or I don't know, some of these other people, like I'll go to them. I'm not going to like call them out on Twitter. It's just not a good look. He's just a goofball. He's someone who, like, got totally quote unquote red pills and then realized there was more money being an alt light guy. And I don't know how he makes money. Someone I think is paying him, but yeah, basically that is him. Rick. Oh, this is a real curveball here. Would Matt Forney be welcome in IE if he did not have such an oddly shaped head? Well, you know, Matt Forney has gone through quite the redemption arc, and I believe that some of his criticisms of the alt-right were correct. He's also written some really disgusting things, but he seems to have admitted that, and, you know, I'm a believer in redemption and people turning a new page and so forth, but... no, I don't think we'd let Matt Forney in IE, though he can be an ally on the sidelines. Ian, what do you think of my Peter Sweden rap? Good, huh? It's pretty good from what I remember. Crushmay, what's the official IE position on the Irony Bros? There isn't one. I know opinions on the quote-unquote Irony Bros differ quite a bit in the organization. Some people love the Weekly Swed and Sean and Beardson. Other people hate them. That's totally okay. That's totally okay. Those guys are just trying to be funny on the internet. But it's worth keeping in mind, they don't attack us when they're saying they're attacking people who are basically attacking us. And I haven't like put them up to it. They're just doing that on their own. So if they're going out there like revealing that Richard Spencer is, you know, a terrible person with no, you know, no ethics, someone who's actually opposed to the idea of morality altogether, then that's fine. They're attacking our enemy. They're attacking people, the 1.0 types. They're attacking bad strategies. And you know, once we, even before I took over, I think, no, it was after I took over, they, yeah, they were just like, oh yeah, I don't think IE's doing all right. IE's doing all right these days. So, I mean, they're just being funny. If you don't think they're funny, that's okay. They're trying to be antagonistic and piss people off. So look, it's like if you have like a comedian roasting you or something, you're not supposed to get mad. You lose when you get mad. Just laugh it off. You can always just block them or mute them. But, I mean, at the end of the day, if you look at what they're actually doing, they're encouraging people to do things like us, like what we're doing, rather than things like, you know, people who are trying to take down IE, like Richard Spencer, are doing. So, I mean, for that, that's fairly good. And, you know, am I going to be inviting Beardson to speak at the conference? Of course not. it's worth pointing out, like, I've known Sean since basically 2016, which isn't that long ago, but, you know, I've hung out with him in person and so forth, so it's not, you know, I knew him before he became an irony bro, I guess. External Pepsi, is Richard an enemy? Well, he's tried harder to take down me and Identity Europa than Antifa and others on the left have. So, I don't know, as long as he's doing what he's doing. I mean, he just, every live stream he does, he just whines about me. He keeps talking about how he wants nothing to do with me. Well, you know, there was a time when he was desperately trying to get McLaren to respond to my Discord messages. So, I mean, enemy's a bit extreme, I would say. I'd say he was an adversary, but he has nothing at this point. He has nothing. Behind the scenes, most of the people who worked with him are convinced that not only – it's not just incompetence or he's rude. Or they're convinced there's something wrong with him, like psychologically. And it's kind of my position too. It's just – I mean, it's really sad. Someone who just destroys every relationship they touch, every project they touch, there's something wrong there. And I – you know, I've talked about this after – when I took over, I said – when others said too, you know, behind the scenes, like, all right, Richard has – no, we talked about this after he destroyed Operation Homeland, because Operation Homeland was his attempt to create a knockoff of IE and try to steal all of the good members in IE. It didn't work, fell apart, never really launched. So I was thinking, like, where does he go from now? If he just let go the petty drama and the infighting and the really vulgar and lowbrow attacks on me and others and just focused on commentary and was like a nice person, was magnanimous, then, yeah, people would just be like, all right, yeah, he's cool, he's okay, you know. But no, he went on a live stream hungover, I think, on New Year's Day, and he's like, Patrick Casey is a short, creepy, ugly incel who should be managing a Pizza Hut. And it's like, dude, you should not. You're the only person that thinks that, Richard. Like, it's, you're just making yourself look bad. Yeah, I don't know. I don't really know where to go from there, but I honestly just kind of feel bad for the guy. He's kind of a lost soul. But anyways, there was a time when he was in a position where he could have done some damage to the organization. And I guess he could always dox people involved. Because, you know, he used to have Phalanx. That was his inner circle. And what happened there? Everyone, after he made his goal destroying IE, everyone left that to join IE. And a lot of them were in IE to begin with. They're like, wait, what? Why are we destroying IE? So, I mean, that's basically the Richard Spencer story. I'm not going to say anything publicly. I haven't said one thing about Richard publicly, and that's been the best strategy. You know, I don't know where he goes from here, but it's not my concern. Don't wish him any want bad things to happen to him, as he appears to want to happen to me. But, yeah, if he ever gets anything going again, if he starts doing events, no one in IE is allowed to go, because I can't trust anyone who sees someone who has worked tirelessly and continues to work tirelessly to take down me, to take down other people in leadership, and to destroy the organization because he couldn't control it. Anyone who sees that says, I still want to work with the guy, is not on board with this, and is of questionable judgment. So that's the end of that. Fredheit, can I pay my dues with Phalanx bucks? Yeah, you can, if you have any left over. Aaron O'Regan, do you like pizza? I really do like pizza, but I've been doing a little carb thing, so I'm going to stop thinking about it. Rick says, perhaps you should public challenge him to an MMA duel. Well, look, at this point, Richard has nothing, and there'd be no reason to – I mean, he basically wants to siphon off the energy of IE. Like, that's what –
the whole thing with the critiquing from the sidelines. He does the same to Fuentes and others. It's you know, any attention we give him is, even however negative, is will keep him, you know, somewhat relevant. So I'm not going to do that. If he challenged me, I would absolutely do that, and I would destroy him. But there's no reason to, like, you know, message him or out of the blue and say, you know, hey, I challenge you to a fight. I don't think he'd do it anyways, but yeah, it wouldn't go well for him. Carl Schmidt, make pizza crust with almond flour and eggs. Thank you. I'm going to actually open up that. And haven't gotten too creative with the low carb stuff. I've just been eating like meat and vegetables sometimes. So yeah, maybe I'll start trying this. Not a bad idea. If he ran in 2020, what then? I think if he manages to fill out the paperwork, then that will be an accomplishment in itself, because that was a big issue for the NPI team. And I'm not even being condescending. Like, that just was something that they had issues with. I mean, yeah, and again, that came off pretty harsh, but whatever. In fact, he screwed up the fire link for his nonprofit so much that people who had donated to him and marked those as tax deductions, he sent an email saying that they might have to file an amended tax return because they don't. Can you imagine that? You give Richard a few $100, you're like, oh, this guy's good, and then 2 years later it's like, ooh, actually you have to file an amended tax return because we screwed something up. That's why, you know, you need to attract the kind of people that we need to, like, support this organization to fund us, and they're not going to want to do that, so... Fryhey, what are we doing with NPI? Talking about them, which is... well, it's worth pointing out, I don't think Richard's actually part of NPI. I'm not 100% sure, but I saw someone on Twitter claiming that Regnery pulled his funding. I don't know if that's true, but I don't know. It doesn't seem to be like there's much support for Richard behind the scenes. And again, that was Twitter user Will2Power, who I actually thought was a Richard Spencer alt, but then went on a whole... rambling critique of him. But anyways, there's no... Yeah, look, Richard played a part for some time. He was useful for a bit, and then he was a net negative, and then he alienated everyone around him, and the movement moved beyond him. You know, after Charlottesville, the day of Charlottesville, maybe it was the day of, I don't remember, I posted a thread saying on Twitter, being very critical, and saying, the alt-right is going to fail if we don't purge 1.0. Because I saw, you know, that event, and they're just flying swastika flags and holding up signs with the N-word, and I was like, this is despicable. No, like, this is never going to work. This is never going to lead anywhere. You know, there's so many people with our views already that don't want that. And you know, he texted me, and he was like, Reinhardt, he always used to put a T on the end for some reason. I said, Reinhardt, we shouldn't. You shouldn't talk like this. You shouldn't say the alt-right was gonna die. And I said, well, I mean, it's gonna die if we don't purge 1.0. And he says, I agree. All right. Well, you flash forward like 6 months later. Look at MSU. You've got fucking Nat Heinbach leading the way. Pardon my language, but I was just looking at that like, okay, this is the complete opposite of what I thought we agreed on. So, it's, you know, we went our separate ways. By now, it's obvious who succeeded, who failed. It's just, you know. We're going to focus on doing what we always did, even back when it was far more heated behind the scenes, and that is just do good work. That's how we win. That's how we win. And it's a way, you know, we build ourselves up. That is our strategy. We do good activism. We put out good content. We constantly take this organization to the next heights without getting involved in the pettiness and all of that. And if people want to try to build themselves up by attacking other people or staying out of drama and so forth, guess what? Most people don't like that. Most people don't respect just... you know, petty attacks on someone who's perceived to be doing good work. So that's basically that. Rabbit Sith, you should make pizza out of iron shavings and ground pine needles. That's a pizza for a real man. Yeah, I'm still trying to become a real man, and I think that's a good way to do that. Destroy my my stomach lining in order to prove my masculinity. All right, I'm going to answer the last few questions. If you're not typing, don't add a new question. If you're typing, you can finish it. Can you call yourself a man if you can be kept away from brunch? That's a good question, I think, yeah. You know, say what you want about Fuentes. I know he's kind of another controversial figure, probably for good reason, among IE, but that video he did where he was just calling out the brunch stuff was pretty funny. Fryheight, so no on the Richard Spencer's gay posters. Yeah, we won't be doing that. There are a lot of people, look, there are people that like used to support Richard behind the scenes financially and otherwise who, you know, while they don't support him anymore, they don't want us to, like, attack him. And part of the reason why they're supporting us and not him is because they're like, yeah, we just want to support someone who's going to do good work and not just get bogged down. And I mean, because, I don't know, I think when you're maybe a little bit younger, it depends on your personality type, like, getting really, like, heated on the internet, being like, screw you, you suck, I hate you. Like, it's tempting to be like, oh, yeah, you owned that guy. But for a lot of people out there, they see that and they're like, this is petty, this is spiteful, this is repugnant. And, you know, just like the Jared Taylor types. Like, there are a lot of people out there. So, like that. So, no Richard Spencer's gay posters, though. I know you're kidding. Eugene of Savoy. Question about strategy. What is wrong with being elitist? That is a good question. It's one that is... It just depends on the type of elitism. If we're going to be like Richard Spencer and denounce people for being middle class, well, good luck with that. And also the people who come from the most, like, prestigious backgrounds and stuff generally don't like that kind of talk either. We should be elitist in terms of, as far as recruiting for the organization, in terms of quality of character, commitment, intelligence, you know, capability, right? That's what matters. That's what matters. I'd rather have one working class guy who's a family man and who's gotten it together and he's capable of delivering activism, comes to all events, than, you know, 100 trust fund people who, you know, well, maybe if those 100 trust fund people had a lot of money, maybe I would do that trade. But the point is that, like, yeah, I don't really pay attention to class in terms of money and socioeconomic background when it comes to seeing who's a valuable member and who we want to recruit. Some of our best guys are tradesmen, right? Work construction. You know, had parents who didn't go to college, they didn't go to college. They're still great people. They're smart. They know a lot, so... It's just it depends on the kind of elitism that we're going for. Yeah, you know, Thomas Jefferson talked about the natural aristocracy, which is the one that exists again in terms of these kinds of qualities, rather than, you know, having a family who had quite a bit of wealth. But, you know, we shouldn't be anti. You know, while we want to be open to everyone from. You know, if they meet our standards from across the class spectrum, because yeah, I've seen some people say like, oh, Spencer's a trust fund loser, whatever. That's if we start using that language, that's a great way to tell people like with trust funds who are well intentioned not to join. And no, we need people who are independently wealthy. Even if they're not going to give us a lot of money, they don't have to worry about getting doxxed, right? They don't have to worry about losing their job. So these kinds of things matter too. But anyways, guys, thank you. It's been a great 2 hours. I enjoyed talking with you all.